Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Who Cares Wins, your health and wellbeing radio show here on channelradio.co.uk. I hope everybody's fit, well and healthy today because the world is shaking on its axis. My esteemed colleague and co-presenter Angela Bryce-Stevenson can't be with us today because she is unwell. As we reported last week, Angela is never unwell, but unfortunately the bugs have caught up with her finally after about 15 years of very good health. She's been felled. So Angela, wishing you well, missing you. I texted her a photo outside here. We have a pet shop next door and they've got a whole host of baby husky puppies. So I texted her the photo in the hope that will cheer her up. But she can't be with us today. She does send her best wishes to everybody and to our guest, who I will introduce to you in just a moment. But as a clue to who our guest is and what she's going to talk about, here's a little bit of music.
I love to go wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back. Valerie, Valera, 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 Valerie, Valera, my knapsack on my back.
So, were you singing along? I hope you were. My special guest today is Nikki Ratcliffe of Virtually You. Good afternoon, Nikki.
Right. Hello.
Put my teeth back in. It's morning. That's what threw me. I said good afternoon, realising it was morning, and then after that, the tongue and the teeth weren't responding. But welcome, Nikki.
Thank you.
Now, we are going to be talking towards the end of our discussion today about what you do for a living, but your main reason for being here today is to share quite traumatic experiences with us, but yeah. What's come out of that in terms of well-being and a complete change of life?
Yeah.
So we're going to take people back, and I was actually quite shocked to hear how long ago this event was.
Yeah.
The event is 7/7. That's what everybody knows it as. It's a bit like 9/11, but 7/7 was the London bombing, suicide bombers attempted suicide bombers. It happened on the 7th of July 2005. So it's 10 years this year.
Yeah.
Just a quick overview for anybody who either can't remember or might have been aware at the time. But basically, four suicide bombers struck in central London on Thursday, the 7th of July 2005, killing 52 people and injuring more than 770. It was a coordinated attack hits the transport system as the morning rush hour drew to a close. Three bombs went off on or around 8:50 a.m. on underground trains just outside Liverpool Street and Edgware Road stations, and on another travelling between King's Cross and Russell Square. The final explosion was around an hour later on a double-decker bus in Tavistock Square, not far from King's Cross. And of the 52 people that were killed, 26 were involved in the Russell Square event, 13 on the bus at Tavistock Place, and 7 at Aldgate. Now, a lot of us would have watched those events unfold or have heard about them. Personally, on the day, I was over in the Excel Centre in Docklands, and we were basically locked in, sort of like a quarantine in a way, because the transport system within London, the mobile phone network in London, everything shut down until the authorities could get control of the situation and could work out what exactly was happening. So it was worrying for those of us on the periphery. But, Nikki, you were actually involved in the event itself. You were caught on one of those trains.
Yes. Yeah, I was.
So just before we get into detail on that, let's find out what life was like for you before that eventful day. Yeah. What's your background? What were you involved in at the time?
Well, I was working in London and, I'd recently come out of a long-term relationship, so I decided to make a big change and move to London. Because I'd always dreamt of living in London, what it would be like.
Mm-hmm. And where are you from originally then?
From Kent.
Oh, from Kent, so a local
from Sittingbourne, yeah.
Okay.
And I'd been working in London for a while, but I'd always dreamt of living there and living the high life, you mm-hmm. know. Going out after work and all the exciting things it entails.
Yeah.
And I think I'd been working in the job that I was in a couple of years. So I was just excited at the time, really excited about living there and looking forward to what was ahead. But obviously, little did I know
what was around the corner.
Yeah.
So how long had you been in London before the day?
Literally about a month.
Oh, right. So it's all fresh and exciting for you.
Yeah.
A bit too exciting, though.
Yeah.
So what sort of work were you doing at the time?
I was a secretary for a financial advisors firm.
Right. So proper city work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suited and booted.
Yeah.
And,
yep. In St Paul's. Right. And I was living in Finsbury Park at the time.
All right. So that morning, got up as normal?
I got up as normal. I'd been, I was trying out dating at the time, and I think I was texting some young chap up until about 1 a.m, so I was very tired. I was running late, and where I lived at the time, Finsbury Park Tube Station was literally a 5-minute walk away, so I think it tends to be the nearer you live to where you work, the later you tend to be.
So, yes, we are all proof of that.
Yeah, so that was the case that morning. I felt really tired and wasn't really thinking straight. So I ran down the road, came to the tube station. I don't ever remember really thinking about which carriage I get on. I used to normally try and find one that wasn't very crowded and find a little slot where I could just stand, put my CD player on and just forget about everything, which is... what I did that morning, I can't believe I said CD player, like no one uses those anymore. So I put
that on. How long ago it was.
Yeah. So I put that on and that was it until...
Standing, seating?
I was standing. It was quite difficult to get a seat in the rush hour because it was, the tube was packed. It was just packed, yeah.
And so normal journey up until, how many stops would you be travelling?
I'm not even sure. What I would normally do was go to Holborn, change at Holborn and then go to St Paul's, but I never got there, obviously.
Yeah.
I was just going along and I remember an Indian lady stood opposite me and we were just looking at each other. You know, now and then you kind of pass glances with people.
Yes, for anybody who doesn't live in London, making eye contact is considered weird.
Yeah.
So it does take quite a while within a journey to actually make contact with people or then avoid making contact with people. That's the other thing that people try and do.
Yeah. I think, in that time of the morning, you just want to get to work. You don't really want to chat. But I think we both, I don't know if we had a sixth sense that something was about to happen, but literally just after we kind of looked at each other, I mean, I didn't hear it as much because I had my CD player on really loud.
Right.
So it was more of a vibration, but I had this big sort of boom. I don't know how else to describe it. And I was sort of thrown to the side. I was kind of standing and I was kind of thrown to the side of the tube. Then the doors that I was stood by split open. And basically smoke started coming in straight away.
Wow. So is that immediate?
Yeah, because my tube, I think, was 2 down from the one where it went off.
Right.
So it didn't take long.
Your tube or your carriage?
My carriage is what I should have said. My carriage.
Yeah.
So it went off in the first carriage. And I think it's really difficult, but I think I was in the third.
Okay.
So it was 2 down. And I was quite near that end of it. My brother's a fireman. And when I couldn't work it out, he said, you must have been very close because it doesn't, because the speed that the smoke came in was like immediate. And we just looked at each other. I remember thinking, I didn't immediately panic because I just thought, oh, God, something's...
Here we go again.
Yeah, like, oh, God, something's broken down. I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. And then it just got more and more like it was full. The carriage was just completely full of black soot because obviously all the dirt in the tunnel was... in the smoke, so...
And were the carriage lights on at this point?
No, everything had gone because all the power had gone. I could hear the driver trying to make the tannoy work, but all the power had gone. So it was very, very surreal. I just panicked because I started to realise, hang on, there's no one's come to find us, no one's announcing anything. And I think we all knelt down. Someone said, oh, come on, let's kneel down. Because I think my worst fear was that it was a fire.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're underground, you can't get out of a fire. And I just thought, my God, I'm not ready to go yet. I stupidly reached for my mobile, which
It's instinctive though, isn't it?
Yeah, which was completely useless because I was underground. Mm-hmm. I don't know if one day they'll be able to make it so you can use your mobiles on tube trains.
They've started to do that. I'm far more aware of people now, you know, they used to play games and now you can see people texting.
Yeah.
Certain stations have that.
I think
that... But obviously at the time it would have been no contact at all.
Yeah. And it was quite surreal because I remember looking at a guy stood opposite me and his lips were completely black.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just strange how your mind goes because I thought... Oh, why has he got black lips? He must have been drinking red wine. It's just how your mind goes. It didn't occur to me that it was that I probably looked exactly the same.
So you're all breathing in the smoke that's coming through the carriage at that point.
My mum said when she saw me, this is even though I'd tried to wash it off, I was still quite covered.
It gets everywhere, doesn't it? And it's quite tacky with
skin,
it because it attaches to any moisture.
Yeah.
So you mentioned somebody suggested kneeling down.
Yeah.
I'm thinking smoke-wise, because smoke rises. Is that the idea, to catch fresh air or as much fresh air you can get at the bottom?
It was difficult because it was packed, so there wasn't a lot of room. And gradually, as time went on, I think people were starting to worry more and more, because obviously the longer it goes on, the longer you think, oh, is anyone coming to get us, you know?
Yeah.
And some people started praying, some people started crying, and obviously that then has an effect where everyone starts... So I started to panic.
Mm-hmm.
My main thought went straight to my parents, because my dad, we always joke about me, I've got sort of a natural way of getting myself into situations, but I always manage to get myself out of them. And I sort of remember thinking, almost trying to talk to my dad through my thoughts and say, come on, Dad, how are you going to get me out of this one? But even he wasn't able to.
I couldn't get through to you.
No. So it was really, really difficult. Time. And I remember this girl who was so optimistic, I don't know how she did it, and she kept saying, we're going to be fine, someone's going to come and find us. And I was like, how do you know? You know, we're stuck here underground, I wasn't aware if anyone actually above knew what had happened.
So were you aware of how long time was passing?
It felt like hours. But I think it's probably about 20 minutes to half an hour.
That's a long time, though, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it's a long time.
Pitch dark,
smoke. In smoke, with people praying and crying. Yeah, it just time just felt like forever.
Were you aware of noises from other carriages?
Yeah. I think the carriage to my left, I could tell people were really starting to panic.
That would have been one closer to the bomb.
Yeah, people were trying to kind of talk through carriages, because you know there's that door in between. People were trying to comfort each other. It was just pretty horrible all round, but there were some really amazing people, like that lady who was being sort of positive, because I think I started to cry, and she was like, come on, don't worry, it'll be okay. And there were some really lovely... I'll always remember them. I never know who they are, because we all kind of went our own ways when we got out. But
yeah, they say that about those kind of events, don't they? That there's a stand-up people in your mind that may have been heroic, may have just been comforting, or you might just remember from the day. But as you say, ships that pass in the night,
you're
unlikely to meet up unless there's a group.
And
it's whether those people go to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So what was the first point at which you realised that somebody was coming to help?
I think one lady in our carriage said, I can see someone in a uniform, and that's when I thought, oh, that's it, we're going to be okay, because for someone outside of the tube to be coming, I knew that was it.
So you're in a tunnel at the moment.
We're in a tunnel.
So there's no platform, it's just somebody alongside.
I think, obviously, I found out later they'd shut the whole thing down so you could walk along the tracks.
Right.
And someone said, I can see somebody in a uniform. And my heart just like, I just thought, oh my God, I'm going to be all right. Yeah. You know, it's just an amazing feeling that I can't even put it into words, really. Just the thought that, you know, you're actually going to carry on.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay. And now what happened next? Because obviously there's hundreds of people.
Yeah.
A dozen or more carriages.
I think we had to wait for a while, because I think they couldn't do us all at the same time. So I think they did. It's a bit blurry at this point because I was just so relieved.
Sure.
I think they were letting out each carriage, and then they sort of came to us, let us out. I think we might have gone through a door of another carriage to get out, and I remember there was a window broke at some point. I can't remember why. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was from the inside, but I remember hearing a window smash. So this gentleman, I think he was a policeman, mm-hmm. came and got us, told us to walk up the track, and we were all following mm-hmm. The track. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I hope there's not going to be a train coming.
Yeah.
But he assured us, don't worry, that all the lines are switched off. And we walked up there, climbed up onto the platform at King's Cross,
right.
and then went outside to find complete, you know, madness
yeah.
in London.
I think for a lot of people, those would have been the news reports that they would have seen of people streaming out of King's Cross
yeah.
and the police and the ambulance and the fire service all around that area. And it's sort of the memory that you have as an onlooker. And then you read the reports, and King's Cross isn't mentioned that much because the bombing was Russell Square. But obviously they had to lead you to safety.
Yeah, there was two. What they did was they led some people to Russell Square and then some people to King's Cross.
Right.
Because where the bomb went off, obviously, yeah. they were trying to make sure people didn't have to walk through it or probably couldn't walk through it.
Right.
So that's what happened, yeah.
Now, you did mention you were listening to your CD.
Yeah.
And there's a piece of music that was playing at the time.
Yeah.
Which we always ask guests to request music. And in your feedback to me, you said the reason for choosing it and you said whether it would be appropriate or not. Because obviously not all of the words to this particular song fit in with
no.
health and well-being
no.
and the nature of the event. No. But if you explain to listeners what the piece of music is, it's... Fix You.
That's it.
Coldplay.
Yeah. My mind went blank there. Yeah, I was listening to Fix You by Coldplay as it happened. And I think there's a line in the song about go back to the start. Mm-hmm. And it just always resonates with me because I was listening to that at the time. And that it was, I suppose I almost felt like it was kind of a new beginning.
Right.
Well, there's kind of before and after.
We're going to play that now. So.
Okay, great.
And when we come back, we'll find out what happened to Nikki immediately after the event and the complete change that's happened since. Here we go.
When you try your best but you don't succeed. When you get what you want but not what you need. When you feel so tired but you can't sleep. Stuck in reverse. And the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone it goes to waste. Could it be worse? Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones. And I will try. To let it go. But if you never try, you'll never know just what you were. Lights will.
Channel Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Who Cares Wins on channelradio.co.uk. I'm Jan Mulligan, and with me in the studio today is Nikki Ratcliffe. Hello again, Nikki.
Hello.
So we were both sort of swaying and singing along with that. I'm just thinking, what a lovely sound. And obviously for Nikki, that's taking her right back to the traumatic events of the 7/7 bombings when you were caught up in that train heading towards Russell Square. And just before the break, we had the fact that you were now up on the surface at King's Cross, hundreds if not thousands of people milling around, the passengers trying to go into the station and not understanding what's happening, the passengers coming off the tube trains that have been caught up in it, as well as all the emergency services. What happens to you? Are you guided somewhere?
We were guided towards medical, you know, people, doctors. I was thrown a bottle of water, and we were told to queue up to be seen by a doctor just to check we were okay. I think I was aware that I was physically okay, and I think I was a bit shocked, and I just wanted to get out of. I think I felt a bit claustrophobic because it was really crowded. There was people everywhere, and me and another lady, Chrissy, got chatting, and we decided to sort of just else, you know, sort it, should we just just go and get a coffee,
because
I think we both knew that we were okay. What I didn't realize is that they were taking down your names and details, which was kind of important, so I later did get in touch, but we both just went to a coffee shop because we ironically my friend at the time said she wanted to have a smoke a cigarette after being in a tube full of smoke, but she just, I suppose it's de-stresses. So we went to a coffee shop, and I think during that time we were both just sort of trying to work out what it was, and her daughter texted her saying she'd heard it was a terrorist attack. So this is the first, I think the initial story was that it was a surge, a power surge, that they were saying. I think they probably said that to stop people from panicking. So, you know, I didn't know what a terrorist attack was really at that time, so I assumed that's what it was. Of course, it turned out it wasn't, and then we heard on the radio they actually announced that it was a terrorist attack, and then I think we just both burst into tears because we were just like, oh my god, you know,
sort of that shock and relief at the same time that it's shock that happened, but that you're okay,
that you almost, you know, weren't here, and that finding out that people, you know, sadly, very sadly, that people had lost their lives that we were on a journey to work with, which is just, you know, devastating. And that was that. We just sat there trying to comprehend what had happened, and then I remember this really nice lady came up to us and offered us baby wipes, and I remember thinking, why are you offering us baby wipes? That's such a bizarre thing to come up to someone. And then I realized it was because of our faces, because we were covered in black soot. And it was just, I thought, what a sweet gesture. So she did that, and we did have a bit of a wipe, but I think it, once it gets into the skin, it's quite hard to get out. And then I think my friend went off to meet her daughter, and I rang my dad, who had no idea that anything had happened.
Probably quite good in a way.
Because
it meant they weren't worrying. And
yeah, I think if they had, they probably would have been petrified. I said to him, switch on the radio, listen to the news, then call me back. So he did, and he was obviously very worried, wanted to make sure I was okay. And we agreed it would be a bad idea for me to go back to the flat on my own, probably not. So we decided I would go to work, which, looking back, is quite an insane idea, but I just wanted to be around people.
Totally understand.
So I walked to work, which was bizarre, and I remember going into this coffee shop. I've always wanted to try and find it. I've never found it. And this really kind lady, I kind of like walked in and just burst into tears, and this really lovely lady said, oh, sit down, I'll make you a cup of tea, which is just the English thing, isn't it?
When in doubt,
make someone a cup of tea. So she was lovely, and I'll always remember that. If I could find her, I would so love to thank her, but I've never been able to find her because I can't remember where I was. And then this posh gentleman that was in there said, oh, I'll walk you to your work, because I had no idea how to get to St Paul's, like walking, because I always travel by tube.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so he walked me to work, which was really nice. And I went to work. And I remember my manager kind of flying through going, oh, my God, you're here, you're alive. Because they're all, obviously, everyone's coming to work and then, like, noticed I was missing.
So were you the only one of the team that was missing?
Yeah.
Then? So that must have been quite scary for
yeah,
them.
So they were like, thank God you're all right. So, and then we had similar to, I think you said, where we're all just locked in.
Yeah.
So, and I was, I don't, you know, you just don't think straight. So I was like, I want to go to the pub. I need a drink. And they wouldn't let me out. So.
I've just survived this yeah. event. I need something alcoholic.
Yeah. I need a glass of red wine. Yeah.
So, obviously the day itself, just traumatic in so many ways. Ajay, grateful that you've come out of it. Survived,
yeah.
But then reality kicks in, and there's the traumatic aspect, the emotional side.
It's a massive high. You know, I think anyone who's been in the situation where you just I don't think you can ever really describe it, but just for a moment you think this is it, this is the end. You know, it's awful, and then you have this massive euphoria of like, oh, I'm okay. You know, mm-hmm. life's amazing. You know, I'm gonna change the world and all of this sort of thing. And then you come down and you're like, oh, everything's still the same. And I think, you know, I was single at the time, and seeing everyone rushing to the arms of their husbands and partners, that made me feel a bit lonely, because I just thought, oh, you know, there's no one here to kind of, it's amazing, obviously, your family, but you kind of want to know that someone,
special person
knows, is glad that you're still here. Mm. So that was, I don't know, for me, that affected me a bit, but yeah, it was just a massive come down, really, and I just sort of went into myself a bit.
Yeah. So in going into yourself, there must have been people around you who were quite concerned about that, because presumably you weren't normal Nikki.
No, because I just ramble on to anyone, really. I'm very chatty, and I just completely changed. I think I used to go out a lot. I wasn't really going out after work. I started going home to stay with my parents, mm-hmm. rather than staying in London. I kind of just completely stepped away from my social life, really. Just didn't want to.
And in terms, you mentioned that the queue that was for medical help was also taking names.
Yeah.
Were you contacted by anybody and offered counselling or support groups or anything like that?
I wrote to Ken Livingston, actually.
Right.
And he sent me a nice reply, which was very, very
was he
nice.
Mayor at the time?
He was.
Yeah,
he was. And they have to check that, obviously, because anyone could say mm-hmm. I was there. So they have to check with you certain details, because obviously you could tell if someone was there. And
yeah.
So I had to, you know, provide information to prove that I was there. And then, then once that was all confirmed, I got offered a free counselling, mm-hmm. which I did take up. But it was, I really liked the counsellor I had, but he was training in it. And then halfway through my sort of time with him, they said, oh, he's finished. We're going to give you someone else. And that...
Oh, that's not right for you, is it?
No, because I'd really bonded with him and I really liked him. He seemed to kind of understand. Mm-hmm. And then I got this other lady and we had to start over again, and I just kind of lost interest in it. So that was quite naughty of me, really. So I just wasn't really doing anything to try and get myself back out there.
How many days, weeks or months are we at this stage after the event?
Maybe 6 months, I think. Mm-hmm. I just carried on. Initially, I kind of carried on with life, you know. But then also I had the trauma of my sister-in-law went into premature labour and gave birth to twins, and the little boy, I think they were 3 months premature, didn't make it. So our whole family was just going through a really difficult time.
Very difficult, yes.
So I think during that time I was supporting my brother. I was going to the hospital all the time to see my niece who survived. So I had a kind of a delay of dealing with what had happened. And mm-hmm. then once she was okay, then that's when it all sort of came tumbling down for me, really.
Yeah. And I heard, or rather I saw an interview that you'd given that you mentioned you joined a support group.
Yeah, a lady, I can't remember her name now, but she created kind of an online support group called King's Cross United.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just post things, you know, if you wanted a bit of support, which was brilliant at the time, because I think I felt a bit lost, because none of my friends, you know, as hard as they can, they couldn't, you know, understand what it was like.
Yeah.
Some people really supportive, some were like, come on, you need to move on now. It's happened, you know, get on with it. And they thought, as I wasn't physically injured, I should be fine.
It's those hidden illnesses and problems that yeah. people who aren't experiencing them can't appreciate
yeah.
the impact of.
Yeah.
And then your mum had a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well.
Mothers always do.
I know, they're brilliant, aren't they? Yeah, so she, I think my mum, you know, she's kind of come on, get back out there, get on with life. Not to the point of, you know, she was very sensitive about everything, but I think she could tell I was kind of going down a path and mm-hmm. she was worried about me. And she sort of dropped into the conversation, oh, maybe you should join a club. And I just thought, oh my God, I don't want to join a club. And then she mentioned the word rambling, and I just thought, as in the walking, and I just thought, oh no, it's like I'm too young to, you know, start going.
It's a mental image, isn't there?
Yeah.
About ramblers.
Yeah.
Sorry, ramblers. We love you all.
Yeah. I'm very pro ramblers now, but at the time, I think I was 29 or, oh God, I should know really, because I must have been 28 because it was 10 years ago. And yeah, so she suggested that, and I initially poo-pooed it, and then I was sat at home one night thinking, what have I got to lose? You know, at the moment, mm-hmm. I'm not going out at all. So why not? So I rang up a walk leader for the group that I'm in and just said, can I come along? And that was it. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we will return to hear more, because this is the main thrust of our conversation
yeah.
now, the benefits of walking on health in general, but mental health in particular.
Yeah.
So I've picked the next track, just the title more than the words. It's Dire Straits and Walk of Life.
Yeah.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Who Cares Wins. And with me in the studio today, I have Nikki Ratcliffe, who, having at first thought, the Ramblers. Mm-hmm. What did we say during the break? Anoraks and bobble hats.
Yeah.
That's the old image of Ramblers.
Yeah.
And I did in fact tweet ahead of the show to say that Nikki's living proof that not all Ramblers are anoraks. And there was muffled and concerned mutterings in the ether about my use of the term. I use it totally affectionately. I'm a closet anorak myself. I haven't joined the Ramblers, but every year I think I really should.
You really should.
Really should. So maybe Nikki will get me off. Yeah. I'm not on my backside a lot. I do walk. But I tend to walk either alone or with a couple of friends. Maybe that walking group will happen this year.
Yeah.
So Nikki's about to entice me to make one step closer to doing that. So your mother got you interested is probably not the right word,
yeah.
but curious. And you went off
gentle,
to your...
gentle push.
I was just going to mention your mother now because I tuned in to Business Bunker, which you were on earlier in the week, last week with Jules and Paul. And your mother very kindly made some tiffin, which you took to the studio and they all shared. And I was listening to this and I thought, are we going to get tiffin on Monday? And yes, your mother came up trumps. And there is tiffin in the studio. So I thank you very much, mother. It's Hazel, isn't
Hazel,
it?
Hazel, yeah.
Thank you, Hazel. I do apologise because I can't partake due to a few intolerances. But I'm going to whisk one away and pass that to Angela. And hopefully she'll feel a bit better or it will make her feel a bit better.
Yeah.
So we thank you, Hazel, for that. But we're also thanking Hazel because she put you in touch with the thought of going to Ramblers.
She did, yeah.
What was your first session like? Your first meeting.
My first walk.
Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. It was brilliant. I mean, it was torrential rain. It was an hour's drive from where I lived. It could, you know, everything was just
the signs were almost telling you to go home.
Yeah, they were. This chap who was leading, he lived in Sittingbourne, so I rang him and said, you know, is it right if I come along? And he said it was fine. I think it was 12 miles. And I got in touch with him. He offered me a lift. And I thought, oh, this is a bit, you know, I don't know this person. But my mum knew him and she said he was fine. So I thought, oh, okay, that's fine. So I got a lift with him. He was leading. We got there. Torrential rain. No one had turned up because the weather was awful. Who in their right mind would go walking for 12 miles in torrential rain? So I thought, oh, it's all right. He's probably just going to turn back. And he was like, well, we've driven all this way, so we might as well do it. And I just thought, oh, my God. You know, I've got 12 miles to walk with a man that I barely know. So it was a bit strange. But it was a figure of eight, so we don't do that many anymore. But it basically do sort of a walk from – they normally start at a pub. So we do half of the walk from the pub, ending up back at the pub, have lunch, and then do the rest of it.
Right.
And at lunchtime.
So there's an incentive.
There is incentive. So we found things to talk about and he was quite a friendly guy, so it was fine. And then at lunchtime, three others turned up who were really nice. And that kind of, you know, got me a bit more.
And is that typical? Can people join part way through?
They can when we do a figure of eight.
Right.
But most of the time, everyone joins at the start.
Okay.
That's quite rare. But it was more it was weird. It was like a weird sensation because it was raining and I had this kind of weird moment where I just felt better.
Right.
Just for being in the countryside, in the fresh air, in kind of like nature, I suppose. Even though it was raining, I had this weird feeling of actually enjoying it. So.
Well, the thing I find with walking is it's the one thing that switches my day-to-day brain off.
Yeah.
As you say, you can look at the countryside, you can look at the weather, you can bemoan the fact that it's cold or it's wet or it's slippery, but it's taken that stressful thought process that we can get locked into away for that moment.
Yeah.
So is that what you were finding?
Yeah. I think, you know, at the time I was working in London and being stuck in an office all day, you know, you kind of forget what's out there in the countryside and how beautiful it is. And it just suddenly hit me that, you know, there's this big world out there that I've not been experiencing. I've just been, you know, wallowing and sat inside.
Yep.
So, yeah, it made a massive difference.
So that was your first walk?
Yeah.
How long a gap between that and your
second? I think I went the next, they said this, I remember one of the chaps that turned up halfway through said, oh, I doubt we'll see you again then.
Because the weather. Fire or rain.
Yeah, he was just like, gosh, you couldn't have picked the, you know, worst day to turn up for your first walk. I mean, I was really excited because I bought walking boots and I'd really gone for it. Mm-hmm. So I decided, right, if I'm going to do this, to do it properly.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I've spent, you know, I don't know, £80 on a new pair of boots. I might as well go again. So I think I didn't go every week at that point. I do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, wasn't completely taken straight away to that extent. But shortly, it didn't take long, a few months, and I was going every week.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you'd been to counselling. You'd been to, well, you'd had remote online support group.
With survivors.
With survivors. And then you'd done the walking.
Yeah.
Looking at you and hearing you, you get so animated when you talk about the walking side
of it. Yeah.
It seems that that one for you got the gold star.
Yeah.
To help just lift you.
It was, yeah, it's amazing because I think, you know, you can think, oh, I'm the only person that is going through a bad time, and you can get a bit insular. But then I think the thing with the walking group is that you get chatting and you realise that everyone's gone through some bad experience or another at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. And it kind of opens you up a bit to realise, actually, it's not just you. You know, the world isn't against you. It's just this happened and it's bad. But, you know, everyone goes through bad times and you've just got to kind of hang in there and get through it. And I think it made me realise that there's other people that are going through mm-hmm. difficult times.
And I love your expression of dealing with a life-changing event, that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind what your life-changing event was. You were in a tunnel.
Yeah, so literally, there is.
You found walking, and you're obviously a strong advocate for that now, because you walk, as you say, every week.
Yeah.
You're a member of the East Kent Walking Group?
East Kent Walking Group,
and that's part of Ramblers UK or GB?
UK, I think.
Ramblers UK.
Yeah.
If anybody's listening from Ramblers, please let us know if I've promoted you incorrectly. We are big fans here, and we want to get people involved. So we're obviously going to share the Ramblers links on our Facebook page and LinkedIn after the show.
Yeah.
The fact that you're a member of East Kent, what kind of geographical area does each group cover? Do you know? Would there be a north, south, east?
Yeah,
and west
there's East
Kent?
Kent and West Kent, I
right.
think. But
okay.
I'm in, it's quite funny, I'm in the young, supposedly the young people's walking group. But I've been in it for about 8-9 years and we're all just getting older. So,
so
we started as 20s, 30s, then we went to 30s, 40s, now we're 30s, 40s, 50s. So,
and you're still technically the young group.
Yeah. So we just kind of like are letting it grow organically, and anyone that just enjoys walking really can come along. So
on that first walk, 12 miles, for some people they would think, oh, there's no way I can do 12 miles. Do people start and stop and wait to be collected long route or head back on their own?
The walk leader walks to the pace of the slowest walker. So if you realise you're losing, I mean, the leader always turns around and checks that everyone's together. We normally do quite a nice pace, I think.
Right.
I wouldn't advise just randomly doing 12 miles if you haven't, you know, done any walking or running, or if you're not that way, you know, inclined.
Right.
I think you've got to have a certain level of fitness.
So what might be the shortest walk that a group would do?
Sort of six.
Right.
Six or seven. And we do short walks as well.
Okay.
But, you know, we do look after someone who's new.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the people kind of interested are already into sort of exercise of some sort.
Yeah.
And I think you can do 12 miles. You know, you don't have to be super fit. You can do it.
Yeah. And you said you threw yourself into it. You got yourself a new pair of boots ahead of Thursday. That says to me, blisters just waiting to happen. So are there any top hints and tips, do's and don'ts
for
new
walkers?
Well, mine
would definitely be, this sounds really geeky, but good socks.
Good socks, right.
Yeah. There's this, I think they're called 1,000 miles or something, but they, because I ended up getting an Achilles injury not that long ago, which apparently is a walker's injury. Having good socks that support your ankle are really, and really good boots.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of what you refer to as good and price-wise? Are we looking under 100 for both, or are we looking to maybe put some money aside and save up?
Yeah, it depends, because walking boots are funny, because you can, it's got to be comfort, so you mm-hmm. could get a cheap pair, but if they fit you perfectly, then I would just go for the ones that fit. Right. This guy in a shop advised me that. He said, you know, it's not always the most expensive ones. It may be that they don't last that long mm-hmm. because they're not, you know, they're not as good quality. But if they're comfortable, that is definitely the best option, because sometimes I've had friends get really expensive ones and they're not right for their feet.
Yeah.
So I think just make sure, and I would definitely advise walking around at home, because I've known so many people go on a walk in their brand new boots and then they've got blisters.
Yeah.
And then they're stuck with these boots. So, yeah.
And the benefits, obviously, we've spoken about are, you know, your mental health, the outlook on life that you was changed yeah. by the walking and seeing the countryside. But there was a hidden benefit to you.
Yeah, in the last few years, yeah.
Spill the beans.
Yeah.
The added bonus. Not everybody gets one of these free when they join.
No,
the group,
no, it took me 6 or 7 years. And yeah, I mean, obviously you don't join a walking group with the intention of meeting your husband. Although I think maybe it was in the back of my mind, you never know, there might be a might be a dashing man in the group.
Was the first man you met on the first day?
No, no, unfortunately not. No, that would have been brilliant.
It would,
but yeah, I would have been like, woo. Yeah, no, it was Mike. I think, yeah, a friend in the group, a mutual friend, suggested he come along because he used to be in the long distance group, which do like 25 miles.
Okay.
And he wanted a bit of a break, so he came on one of ours.
He downgeared to 12.
Yeah,
miles.
He downgeared to 12. And I just remember turning up to the walk. And it had to be in the morning where I hadn't made a lot of effort. Sometimes I try a bit of mascara, but no, this was the morning. I was just tired. I didn't really feel like getting up early, but I always try and force myself to go because I know once I'm there, I enjoy it. And a friend was like, come on, you know, get out of bed, come on. So I went along and I just remember seeing him in the car park and I thought, ooh, he's quite nice. And that, yeah, that was it really. I think I just randomly, because I'd been looking on our group Facebook page, he'd been on some other walks, and I randomly said to him, oh, I've just seen a photo of you on Facebook. He actually wasn't on Facebook, so he had no idea what I was talking about. So that was like a bit of an icebreaker or not. And he ended up, we got chatting, and he looked at my car and noticed that my tyres were massively flat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when was the last time you pumped them up? And I was just like, I don't really remember. So
your hero.
Yeah, so he pumped them up, and everyone, this was at the end of the walk, the entire group were just laughing their heads off because they were watching. He was completely clueless to the whole thing. They knew that I liked him, you know, because your friends always know, don't they?
Oh, they do.
Yeah, so that was that. And then I think we just went out for a drink, and it went from there, really.
So the benefits of joining the Ramblers.
Yeah.
Fresh air, good mental health, yeah. And a hubby.
Yeah.
It's the top three.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily in that order.
No.
Well, we've had a tweet. Angela, she said, hey, I'm awake. So good to hear you're awake, Angela.
Hi,
I hope
Angela.
You're feeling a bit better. And yes, you noticed there was a lovely comment from our top listener, Gwen, on Facebook. Hope you're listening in and you're staying with us, Gwen, for the show. Time is flying by, as it always does. I'm going to skip the next piece of music and play it out because we're running out of time. What I want to do now, Nikki, is talk to you about... So rambling gave you that lift in life and that positive attitude and feeling better mentally
yeah.
from the events that have happened. Yeah. But you've made other changes in your life as well. You're no longer trudging up to London
no.
working.
Yeah.
What do you do now?
Well, I've started my own business. I wanted to go down the virtual assistant route, and then I found that my I do the group's Facebook page.
So the Ramblers group.
Yeah. Our group's Facebook page, try and entice people to get in talking. And I found that I really enjoyed that. I've started writing reviews for our weekends away.
Mm-hmm.
They're normally slight comedy twist to them.
Right.
And I just really enjoyed it, and I just thought, and then I think my dad said, oh, you know, I think he heard on the radio someone tweeted for a living, and I just thought, oh, well, that'd be my dream job. So I looked into it, and so I'd started my own social media business. So.
Okay, so what does that involve?
I do sort of social media coaching for small businesses. And
so you might explain to me how I can get the most out of
yeah.
Facebook and LinkedIn to promote my business.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sort of content ideas.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes I do, just some people don't know how to set up their Facebook page, so I might do that. And then I also offer monthly support where I'd sort of do it on their behalf. But I do make sure that I spend a long time with them, finding out their voice for their business.
Right.
Which I think is really important if you know, if you're posting on behalf of someone.
Yes, because yeah. I guess you must get quite a mixture of businesses, and you can't be a master of all of those in terms of knowledge. So how long might you spend with somebody getting to know them, and sort of?
Sometimes a few hours, because I think it takes a while to find out about someone, why they do what they do, why they love it. And also, I stay in constant contact with them, making sure they're happy.
Right. So you can do anything from just kickstarting somebody, introducing them to social media and setting up the accounts, and then they're off and running.
Yeah.
To complete management of doing their posts for them and their content, Wow. So that must keep you busy. Because I mean, you were asking beforehand about the tweets and the posts that we do for
Who Cares Wins. Yeah, I think they're great.
Thank you very much. That wasn't a plug to get you to say that. But Angela does the majority of them, and I just don't know where she finds the time, because it's quite time consuming to, A, physically type everything in and get it scheduled, but then come up with the words.
It's the originality as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but you're loving it.
Yeah, I really love it. Yeah, it's nice to wake up and look forward to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know.
And any plans for expansion, world domination?
Oh, yes.
Excellent. What's on the cards?
Well, I plan to have an international... No, I'm only joking. just to enjoy it and maybe get some more work through some more clients. And just... I'm really passionate about helping small businesses like myself.
Right.
Just to get out there, and I think social media really is a big outlet for businesses that maybe just don't necessarily want to use it.
Yeah. So as you said, you're now doing this as a business, and the business is Virtually You.
Yes.
So it's virtually one word with a capital U on the end of that. But you're also posting on behalf of the East Kent Ramblers.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to read your post for that, where would they search for that?
It's East Kent Walking Group.
Okay.
If you just put that into Facebook, so it comes up. Yeah. And we put pictures of walks on there, and I actually made a ridiculous quote yesterday and said something like, oh, isn't it funny how the quicker you walk, the walk takes less time, or something like that. What I meant was, and then everyone was like, I can't believe you just said that. I meant is, like, it feels like the time just goes quick, you know, because you're enjoying it.
Yes.
Whereas when you're walking slowly, it's just like, oh. But that was kind of a daft thing to say. But I put that on there.
So if anybody like me has sort of been umming and ahhing about walking, possibly the East Kent Walkers Group Facebook page might be a good place to start.
Yeah, and you can send us a message.
And does that page also have your schedule of walks? Your sort of diary?
I think we tend to put them on as events.
Right.
You know, sometimes we don't get a chance, but we normally try and put it on as event. Yeah, so you can see when and where it is. But probably best to go to the website.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you've had a life-changing event, if you're feeling a bit low, if you're thinking, what can I do with myself? Walking is something that Nikki would very strongly advocate.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you're in East Kent, you could join the East Kent Walking Group and see Nikki. But there are groups all the way around the UK. And obviously, if you're listening from abroad, there are going to be walking groups in a town or an area near you.
Yeah, so it's everywhere. So.
And
or start your own.
It doesn't cost, because a good pair of socks and a good pair of boots if you're on rough terrain, but some groups do city walks.
Yeah,
you can even go on guided tours just to get into the walking habit. So there's always a place to start. And I say, looking across at Nikki now,
I'm nodding. I forget I'm nodding. On the radio.
But her eyes light up, and her whole body language changes when she talks about walking.
Yeah,
it's worked for her. You never know, it might work for you. But if it doesn't, and you've found something else that's helped you, either physically or with your mental well-being, we'd love to hear from you. It's at Cares Wins is our Twitter handle. We'll post all of our links from today's show and all of Nikki's contact details on Facebook and on LinkedIn. Thank you very much for your time today, Nikki.
Thank you. It's
been a pleasure having you on. I know Angelo's very upset about missing you, so we may have to have you back on to repeat this in a year or so's time when you've done loads more walks or whatever. But thank you very much, and thank you to your mother for the tiffin.
I will.
Make sure Angelo gets the coffee. We're going to play out with a piece of music. It's called I Can See Clearly Now The Rain Has Gone by Johnny Nash.
Song.
And I thought it was just appropriate because you were raining on your very
first
day.
Yeah, that is very appropriate.
You've kept on walking.
Yeah.
And new lease of life.
Yeah.
All the best for the future and
your
business.
Thank you. You too.
Next week, folks, we hope to have an interview with Sheila and Derek Appleton of Botcher Herne Bay. They're coming up for their 2-year anniversary. So tune in next Monday when I will be here. Hopefully Angela will be back. But in the meantime, have a lovely week all. Bye for now.
I can see clearly.